live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back, the Total Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network again, TotalTutor.net. For more information, Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley, Instagram, Total Tutor, Pinterest, Neil Haley, and Google Plus, Neil Haley. And this actor has one of the most amazing resumes ever, and he is writing a memoir, and I'm just an absolute huge fan of a lot of his shows, so I'm excited to welcome the program celebrity William Daniels. William, thanks for calling. How are you?
I'm fine, Neil. How are you?
I'm tremendous, and to get the opportunity to talk to you, it's an absolute honor. And looking at, I guess, when you first became an actor, did you think this career would last for this long period of time when you first started?
Do I think what?
How long your career would be from starting from when you first started and have this many years acting?
Well, when I first started, I wasn't an actor. I was really a tap dancer.
Okay.
I was a team, excuse me, of my sister and I. We had a stage mother who put us into tap dancing and all that kind of thing. She was, I guess, what you'd call a stage mother. She had hopes of us having a career in show business, which I suppose she would have liked to have had herself, except because of her circumstances, that wasn't possible. So she had us, she kept her eye open on the paper to see whenever anything was auditioning. And I'm giving you the beginning of our story, if you want it. I don't know. she watched in the papers for any opportunities for us to get into show business. And there was a radio show that Nick Kenny, who had a daily column in the Daily Mirror in New York, and he had a children's show on radio, and another saw that, and I had been taking tap dancing lessons and coming home and teaching my sister the steps that I learned. So she took us over there, and for Nick Kenny's brother, Charles, Charles Kenny. And we started tap dancing, and he said, wait a minute, this is radio, tap dancing doesn't work. And he said, now, if they sang, and so my mother dragged us home and taught us a song, took us back to another audition for Charlie Kenny, and we started singing. He said, no, not in unison. Maybe if you sang in harmony. So she dragged us back home and taught us harmony. And then we went back to Charlie Kenny again. And this is the third time now. And he said, yeah, that's it. So that's the way we got onto the radio show. And this, by the way, was a long time ago and was before television. and so that became...
How old were you, Bill?
Oh gosh, Bonnie, I'm not sure. I was probably around 8.
Oh, wow.
And I think Jackie was 6. My sister, Jacqueline, we call
wow.
Jackie, she was 6. And we went on to his radio show. He had a show for kids.
My gosh.
Not only yeah. that, but he also took them out and... At what he called benefits to the Elks Club and this and place and that place. And we went along with that. And that's the way we started out. And that's the way we started.
Wow. So that started your whole showbiz career, William, correct?
That's exactly right.
And to think about how technology is where it is today compared to when it was just radio, you must be amazed for sure.
No, it was totally different, and we were still around when we first. I remember when we were over at NBC, we were on a children's show called the Horn and Hardart. That was the Horn and Hardart Automats. I don't know if you recall those, but this was the Horn and Hardart Children's Hour. We got onto that at NBC. So we spent a lot of time over at NBC on the third floor there, and we even went into a studio. They asked us to come in and do a little song out of, and it was an experimental studio with huge amounts of lights and hot, so hot you couldn't touch the microphone.
Oh, wow.
And they were experimenting with television, and they needed at that point a lot of light going on in order to get a picture. But we couldn't stay in there very long. We sang a couple of choruses and got the hell out of there. But that was the beginning of television, really.
The beginning of TV and being part of it. Were you nervous at any point when you were first performing on television compared to radio?
Were we nervous? You know, we were very young, and I don't think kids are always aware of what's happening to them. And I would guess that we were nervous, but we never actually enunciated it in our minds. We were just put into it, and we did it as we were told. I remember we used to do these benefits, and there was one for Al Smith, a huge benefit, and my sister Jackie and I were waiting to go on, but the star that they've cajoled into coming and performing was Eddie Cantor, and he came on, and he was a nervous wreck. And, you know, saying, I don't know why I'm here. I don't have my piano. I don't have my pianist. I don't have anybody. And he went on until they just shoved him on. And then, of course, they couldn't get him off because he just sang and sang and sang. But I looked at him and I thought, if he's nervous, what about you?
Right, exactly.
And that was the first time I realized, of course, we were nervous. We were just kids. You know, I was probably 8 and Jackie was 6, something like that. And sure, we were nervous. I don't know any performer who isn't nervous.
Right. Especially when you know your audience, you know
exactly
what's happening. And I look back, I was a former professional wrestler, William, and when I would perform there, you just never knew what to expect with the crowd. You never expected how would that wrestler perform, and you're nervous, what if I mess up the first part and then the whole match is screwed
exactly
up, or you get on the mic and you completely forget what you're going to say. So I remember all that from days when I was young.
You've been through that too.
Yeah, I definitely have been through that. That's given me this ability to interview people, because if you're thrown in a Southern studio and being told you're going to have to be this certain character and go live, it's an interesting thing. So your career went from specifically performing with your family members to then going to on stage. So you started as a stage actor, it sounds like. Am I correct?
Yes,
yeah.
That's true. I can't recall how I got into Life with Father. I think I got into it as assistant stage manager. The play was called Life with Father by Russell Prowse and Howard Lindsay, and it ran for 9 years on Broadway. And somewhere during that run, maybe the seventh or sixth year, my mother, who kept her eye on the paper and read that they were looking for children, sent me over to the office of Oscar Serwin, who was the producer, and that was a funny thing, because I had a date with a girl to take her swimming at the St. George swimming pool, and I had to tell her to come home because my mother wanted me to go over and see these people. I didn't have an appointment. I didn't have an agent. I didn't have anything. I just went into the office, and this woman asked me if I had an agent. No. Do you have an appointment? No. She said, well, wait a minute. And she went to... She went into the producer, Oscar Sohn, and said, look, this kid doesn't have any agent or appointment, but he looks like he could cover some of the kids in Life with Father, because there were 4 children in Life with Father. And, she brought me into him, and he was the producer. And he asked me, well, have you... you know, been on Broadway? I said, no. Well, he said, off Broadway? No. He said, well, have you been acted in any school plays? I said, no. I said, you know, I'm a tap dancer, you know. And he kind of laughed and said, you know, you remind me of me when I first came to New York, with lack of experience. But at any rate, that was the beginning of me getting into a play, which was Life with Father at the Empire Theater, that lovely old theater on 41st Street. And I first understudied, and then I started playing the second oldest and then the oldest.
Okay.
And that's the way that went, and that's the way I got started.
Interesting. So you stay on the stage for quite a bit of your career, and then you jump right into specifically playing a principal in the 1963 war drama. So you even played a principal earlier in your career, way before the millions of fans that know you from your days with Boy Meets World and stuff like that. So that's pretty interesting that you had that experience that early in acting, playing a school principal. Yeah.
What did you mention?
Ladybug.
Oh, that, yes, exactly. Yeah, well, that was kind of a, that didn't go anywhere. I mean, it was just
but at least be part of that acting experience of playing a principal and then later on playing a principal again, for sure. Yeah.
That's right.
And then I guess your big...
Same thing happened in Reds.
Really? Oh, interesting.
Okay. Reds. Warren cast him as a labor leader, and then he became a labor leader.
So,
in fact, he was the president's bag.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Interesting. Now,
he led a long strike.
So what would you say would your biggest film debut be? Like the big one that you would say, hey, this was the break, my big break in getting me started in film and stuff. What would you say?
In film?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, maybe Two for the Road with Albert Finney and Audrey Hepburn. That was a nice part. And
had you done 1,000 Clowns?
I'm not sure whether I had. I had been in the Broadway production of 1,000 Clowns, which ran for a year, and then it went to film. And I played the same part I played on Broadway in 1,000 Clowns, and that was my debut in film, playing that part that I had played on Broadway.
Interesting. And your experience on The Graduate must have been The Graduate was very interesting as well, with Dustin Hoffman and Anne Bancroft, for sure.
Oh, yes. Well, because of Mike Nichols, who, you know, kind of knew us from New York, actually knew Bonnie better than me. We all went to the same acting class.
Oh, wow.
At one time or another, which was Lee Strasberg's acting class. And Bonnie knew Mike better than I did. But when I went and had a meeting with him when he was casting The Graduate, I remember Larry Torman said, who was there, and the producer of the picture, said, well, you know, Bill, you know, I love your work, but, you know, you're too young to play Dustin's father, you know. And he was quite right. I was only about 9 years older than he. But Mike really wanted... I think he wanted Broadway actors, and that's what we were, all of us who had been, Dustin had been off Broadway when he saw his performance, and he was an unknown before The Graduate. And so was Liz Wilson from New York. We were all New York actors that Mike, being a New York director, wanted in the picture. And so that's how that came about.
And so, again, plenty of other experiences on screen, the film, but then through television, So those television experiences for sure. And when you really, I think it was a huge opportunity when you got to play Dr. Mark Craig in St. Elsewhere. That really just changed a lot of the experience for you as an actor, right? Now you had The Graduate and you had some other experiences, but to have a TV show that you were on for many years was great for you, right, in your career.
Yes, well, the producer knew us from New York, Bonnie and I. Bonnie, his name is escaping me.
Who? Paltrow? Bruce?
Yeah.
Bruce Paltrow.
Bruce Paltrow had known us, I guess, from New York. I'd been in a picture with his wife.
Blythe Danner.
Blythe Danner was in 1776, the film, with me. At any rate, he called and said, "I'm sending over five scripts of a show that we're doing at NBC, and if you're interested in Dr. Craig, it's yours."
Wow.
So, he sent over these five scripts, and they were very well written by Tom Fontana and that other writer.
John Macias.
John Macias. And he said, I read them, and he got on the phone, and he said, "Well, what do you think? Do you want to do Dr. Craig?" I said, "Well, you know, it's kind of, Bruce, it's kind of a small part. You know, there were an awful lot of characters in this thing." He said, "Listen, Billy, when the writers..." Hello?
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah, I'm here.
Yeah.
So, you're here?
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "When the writers see what you do with it, they're going to write for you," the way it turned out. And pretty soon it included Bonnie as my wife. And so we got a lot of action out of St. Elsewhere. We came away with two Emmys apiece. Bonnie had two Emmys, and I got two Emmys out of that show. But that kind of, in a sense, in television, that did the same thing that The Zoo Story in New York put me on the map in New York,
mm-hmm.
because I won some awards for that show, off-Broadway show. It was Edward Albee's first show called The Zoo Story.
What's going to be really interesting, William, about your memoir in so many ways is just the stories of so many unbelievable experiences. We wouldn't have it in a 25-minute type segment to be able to cover everything. I'm kind of trying to take different decades or different times. First, again, on stage career, to then moving on into film, and then to television. And then another role that I know our listeners out there really remember is when you played the voice of Kit in Knight Rider. Again, for me, that's a show I remember big time. And how was that experience with that one, for sure? When you're still Dr. Mark Craig.
I just thought it was the strangest thing in the world. I had done a show for the producer what's her name, Bonnie? That
oops,
actress.
Oops.
What?
I can't think of it.
Oh, you can't think of it. Anyway, she and I did this show for the producer, and it was kind of an amusing kind of thing. Bernadette Peters was who it was, and I had an interesting experience on this two-hour show that he had. And he gave, a few weeks after it, we did it, he called me and he said, "Bill, would you do me a favor and come over and record some scenes? I've got a couple of pages for you to record because I'm taking it to New York to push for to show the producers and the network." And I said, "Sure." So I went over there and he hands me these pages. And I look at it, and I said, "This is the voice of a car?" And he said, "Yeah." I said, "Oh, okay." So I started reading it, and he said, he interrupted me and said, "Why don't you make it like a robot?" I said, no, And I kept reading a little bit more. He said, how about, you know, one of those Ma Bell voices? I said, would you just let me read this, please? So I just read it as myself, which was the only way really to go about it, if you were going to give it any kind of humanity, never mind a robot's voice. So I did it, you know, just a couple of pages and left and forgot about it because it was just a favor I was doing him. And a few weeks later, he calls me and he said, well, Bill, you know, the network bought it. Can you do this? I said, well, you know, I'm really doing Saint Elsewhere. He said, I know, but it's NBC, and they're willing to work it out. We'll just, you know, wait for you whenever you're available, and you come over and you record the voice of the car. And that's the way that went. I thought it was pretty ridiculous, but it wasn't. It became a very iconic kind of show because
one of my favorite shows growing up in the 80s for sure was that. So,
sure.
And
I just thought it was strange to be the voice of a car.
But so many teenage boys or younger that watched that show idolized that car, saying they wish they had that car and that you would talk to them for sure. So having experience for sure will live in infamy forever because it's just how it works for sure.
I know. it became a very popular. Kit, the voice was called Kit. I still get mail on that.
It's Kit from Knight Rider. But it's interesting that your Emmy Awards, but people will remember you mostly for this. But then I guess the story, you did a lot of other things. But when you got the opportunity to be part of Boy Meets World as a principal, that's an interesting situation because for people, I guess, that are younger than me or close to my age, that being George Feeney, people remember that. I mean, we talk about different eight times of your career and people remember you in The Graduate to people Elsewhere. And then we go all the way to now Knight Rider and now George Feeney. You have some characters that are so iconic, wouldn't you agree, that people just will never forget that if I mention,
I just think I've been lucky to get these kinds of things that worked out that well because I had qualms about playing Mr. Feeney because I didn't want to make fun of a teacher in the teaching profession as it had been previously on television. And I won't go into the names of those guys who made them foolish people. And with Michael Jacobs, the producer, when I went and met with him, and I, you know, I turned it down, and he said, come, have a meeting at least. And I went, and he said, I don't want to make fun of an acting teacher. I think that, you know, teachers in this country are underpaid, and I'm not interested in doing it. He said, no, this character is going to be based on a teacher I had in high school who became a mentor of mine. And he said, this is what I'm shooting for, and it will be a very respectful character. So that's what it turned out to be. And he did write it that way, and for that I'm very grateful. And it turned out to be, what did we do, 6 or 7 seasons, Bonnie? I forget, something like that.
7.
Yeah, and not many actors get that opportunity to do seasons with different shows and have this amazing thing. So, I mean, the memoir, once it comes out, people are just going to be blown away with your experiences, as you even said about, and say, wow, you have different age groups that remember you, William. And and as your wife's on the phone that's been chiming in, we have to say that you're on the line with us, Bonnie, and... Yeah. Really, I mean, thinking about how many lives William's touched in his career as an actor. It's amazing.
It's amazing. And he gets the most incredible mail. And one thing we didn't talk about today is 1776. That affected so many people, that play and the movie. And people really became interested in history and became in American history in the beginning. And he's going to do something in New York around July 4th for that. But he's done that, and then Mr. Feeney, the letters are incredible. You changed my life. You did this, you did that, you know. And I have to say, we have to say that Michael Jacobs wrote it. Bill played it, but Michael wrote it. Yeah. And the combination of his writing and then Bill very, very strongly, you know, having the gravitas and the affecting these people so much. It's really, as I say, it's a combination of the writing and Bill. Because he seems to be a person that whatever he does, people remember. And I think there's a kind of intensity in him, even when he's doing comedy, whatever he's doing, it's a kind of a humanity and a humor.
Definitely. And it can be also intimidating. William, I've interviewed a lot of celebrities, but when I got on the phone with you, I said, okay, I'm going to have to take a step back and really listen to this and not dominate conversations or go in certain ways because, wow.
He is very intimidating, and he does not realize that. I mean, in life, you know, if he says something that sounds a little bit critical, people shake. And I said, Billy, you don't realize. He said, what did I do? What did I do?
And I'm
he doesn't realize that he's doing it.
And William, I'm 6'10", 270 pounds, used to be 310 pounds, former pro wrestler. And William.
You're what?
I used to be 310 pounds, 6'10". I'm 6'10", about 270 now, but because of my. I'm 42 and not a pro wrestler anymore, but I mean, you're very interesting because you don't want your career is just amazing for sure. And Bonnie, I'm so glad that you've been able to chime in specific things that we didn't know. And it's Bonnie Bartlett and Bonnie, were you and William met while he was acting, correct?
I was what?
No,
we met at Northwestern University when we were freshmen.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. So we've been together an awful lot of years. Like, really, we've been together about 67 years. We've been married about 64.
Okay. And were you ever acting as well, Bonnie?
Or always, yeah.
Yeah, oh, okay.
Oh, she was the star at Northwestern. She played Barbara Allen in Dark of the Moon and won the Students' Freshman Award and all that. She was... A bigger personality at the school than I was.
I wouldn't say that. No. We've been together. It's a good combination. It's lasted a long time. And I would say that the work, we both worked a lot. And Bill has worked harder than I, but I took off 10 years too because we have two boys and I wanted to be with them. And so I did take off about 10 years. But the point is that he has been the more... recognized actor, but I've done an awful lot and a lot of good work.
Yeah, I just saw that when I'm pulling up your Wikipedia because I had no idea that you'd be on, Bonnie. So I had another celebrity, Bonnie Bartlett, on the show as well. So what a treat having you two, for sure. What a great team. So, William, where's the best place we can find information on you? And so we know what's going on news-wise once your memoir is finished and people can find info on you. Where's the place?
I'll help you with that. It has a website,
okay.
And it's WilliamDanielsTheActor.com. WilliamDanielsTheActor.com, no spaces. And that'll take you right to a website that is being worked on. And it's almost done, but it's a good website. And that will give you information about the book as it comes out.
All right, well, fantastic. Hopefully. And I will make sure I rerun the interview once the book comes out. So stay in touch with me, Bonnie. Shoot me an email anytime. Go to my website, toltutor.net. Keep in touch.
Okay.
Let me know when it finally comes out. And I'd love to have you back to tell us, you know, how things have been going with the book and stuff. I'm happy to have you on because there's so much more William and I could talk about. And also, Bonnie, and some of your interesting
experiences. You read the book. There's a lot when it comes out. We haven't got a publisher yet. We're working on that. But do read it because there's so many wonderful stories about Lee Strasberg, about Jerome Robbins,
I can tell,
about Warren Beatty. There's all kinds of wonderful stories in there.
Fabulous. Now, William, have you ever been asked to do the one of your Kit lines for us? That would be the kick I'd have for myself. Do you remember any line you could say to Michael? about it. Like, say, go ahead and say one of the lines is Kit. That would just be a great way to finish the interview.
Well, we're going back quite a few years.
Any chance or
danger
not?
Danger ahead, Bill.
What?
Danger ahead.
Oh, yeah. Michael, I believe there is danger ahead. Let's drive carefully, please.
That's fantastic. That's awesome. If you think of anything else next time. So, Bonnie, stay in touch. William, stay in touch. Best of luck to both of you. I can't wait till I hear. I can't wait to hear when the book's out. So take care, guys.
Okay, Neil.
Take care. Thanks again. All right. Appreciate it. Okay. Bye-bye. You're listening to the Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, TollTutor.net for more information. Twitter, TollTutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, TollTutor. Pinterest, Neil Haley. And Google Plus, Neil Haley. And sometimes I get knocked by a lot of my students that I tutor. And the reason is because you're interviewing people from the 80s. I've never heard of that person, even though some people have heard of him. Oh, he was a Heisman Trophy winner, but he was in the dark ages. And when you interview song people, I didn't remember watching them since the 1990s. Well, now, hey, I'm getting back into some pop culture, and so I'm really excited to welcome the program Wands from the great song Thrift Shop with Macklemore. Wands, thanks for calling, man, and so now finally, I guess my students that I tutor will at least say, hey, you're finally interviewing somebody that we know of, not just ones that were big in the 80s and 90s. How are you, Wands?
I'm really good. How are you?
I'm doing great, and it's great to talk to you, and it's kind of funny when I can finally pull up a song that my daughter and I listened to before and say, hey, we're talking to that guy right now driving the car to my house. It's a pretty cool thing, and so we're excited to talk to you today. And when we were talking off air last week, the story of how you met Macklemore, so tell us specifically, your career path was not one that right to stardom, was it? Wants, not at all.
Well, you know, it was not a straight line. I mean, I had been singing for as long as I could remember, and moved to Seattle in 86 and had band after band, and none of those bands ever really amounted to much. While friends of mine, and like Soundgarden and Alice in Chains, and Pearl Jam, those were guys that I used to hang out with on a regular basis, they went on to achieve what they achieved, and I kept grinding and grinding and grinding, and it kind of never happened. Took out to be about 2008, and I kind of started trying to come to terms with, you know, you're not going to be all the things that people have been telling you, you know, since you were in single digits. Dude, you're going to be famous. Dude, you're going to be, you're so talented, blah, 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 blah. It got to a point where I just got tired, and I gave up and for a little while, and it was the worst time of my life, but I kind of dug myself out by writing my own stuff and being encouraged by other people just to do it for the love of music. And I'd relegated myself to being a software test engineer and helping to raise my kids, and had really given up all dreams of being famous, because there's no such thing as an old pop star, or so I believed. But I got a call one June evening and got connected with this guy, Ben Haggerty, and his partner, Ryan Lewis, who I had never heard of, and they had never heard of me. And, you know, I meet these guys for the first time, and all of a sudden, Ryan's playing this music in the background, and Ben is showing me these words, and I sing what's off the top of my head. They like it. They put me in the booth, and 45 minutes later, I was going home, thinking nothing of it, because usually rap guys never called me back. A couple weeks later, they asked me if I want to be in a video, and I said, sure. And their manager picks me up and takes me to a store, and they pick out this suit, and I put on the suit, and I'm amazed that they just want to film me in front of a camera, and it was amazing. I mean, I just, you know, I'd forgotten the words, and that was like the joke of the whole filming session, that I'd forgotten the words of the song. But like I said, no, but these guys usually never call you back. And then about a month later, August 29th, 2012, this video Thrift Shop drops, and I'm sitting at my job watching the numbers go up in total amazement. And then I go back and look back over these other videos, like Other Side and Victory Lap. And I look at Victory Lap and lean back in my chair and go, oh, my God, oh, no. Because it was like this guy was real. You know, he wasn't just another rap guy. So I make it known to their manager that I'd really like to join them in performing this shop song since it's becoming pretty popular through his fans. And they say, sure. And I take all of my vacation time, and all of a sudden I'm on the road for the very first time doing show after show. Like the fifth show in, here's Ben calling me aside and say, dude, we really like you. You do really well on stage and, you know, people really like you. Why don't you join the rest of the tour? And I said, whoa, I've got this really secure job. They're paying me a lot of money. And I don't know. I check with my work, and it was going into a weekend. They didn't get back to me before the weekend started. And that Sunday night, we played a sold out show at the Fillmore in San Francisco, which for me was like Mecca. I was so overwhelmed that we were playing a show there that during soundcheck, I just looked at all the history on the wall, and it just drove me to tears because this was starting to become a real thing.
Oh, wow. I mean, let's bring it back, because the fact of the matter is, when you saw yourself on the video, you shot a couple parts, and then you're seeing yourself with Thrift Shop, and you're seeing it go through the roof. You didn't think Macklemore was that big when you were asked to do part of the song? Did you think that?
No.
No, not at all.
I didn't know about him. I had heard his name before, but I didn't know about him. Not until the day the video dropped and I actually went and did some research and listened to some songs and stuff like that. That was about it.
So at that point, they probably thought, they had no idea that the song was going to hit either, right, Wands? They had no idea.
Nobody did. Nobody thought it was going to do. I mean, between August and October, that tune was, it was starting to attract a lot of attention just because of the speed at which it was accumulating views on YouTube. And by the end of October, you know, within the entourage started believing that it could be something really big. And, after that gig in San Francisco, the next day my job called me and they said, you know, when are you going to be back? And I said, I said, you know what, at my age, an opportunity like this isn't probably going to come again. So I got to stay out here. And with no savings, no safety net, I quit my job and have been touring with them ever since.
I mean, just an amazing story for sure. And so by touring with them, Wands, this is me not knowing you really well. Was the only song you sung with them was Thrift Shop when you toured with them, or did you have other songs with Macklemore as well?
No, that was the only one. That was the only one. And I mean, it was definitely, you know, the blessing of lightning in a bottle. And it's, when I look back on it, it's a combination of three things all happening at the same time. It was, you know, the subject matter that Ben raps about. It was the simplicity and the bounciness of the track that Ryan created, and people just embraced this guy who sounds like Nate Dogg, and that's the reason that they found me. They were looking for a singer who sounded like Nate Dogg, and I'd been doing that for locally for years. So,
and to remind people about Nate Dogg, for our listeners out there, Nate Dogg, explain who Nate Dogg is.
Nate Dogg is, he is probably the most prolific and best-known West Coast hook singer ever. And I'll sing you one line, and everybody will know who Nate Dogg is.
Okay.
If they know hip-hop. If you know like I know, you don't want to step to this. It's the G-Funk era, funked out with a gangster twist. And that's like one of the most famous lines from the song with Warren G called Regulate.
Yes.
And that's Nate Dogg. That's, you know, and if you listen to some of his records, like I did, I went back and did some more research, and it's just amazing you know, he was just amazing.
Yeah, and so that is the kind of genre that you liked. It looked like you liked a lot of different things from where you're from, especially when you talked about Pearl Jam and different things. You like a lot of variety of music, but Nate Dogg, somebody that you just said, hey, this is something, and that's what Macklemore was looking for. So going on this tour, you basically are the showstopper of any of the shows, because once you come on and the Thrift Shop comes on, this place goes nuts, right? You're like this. You're like the how can I explain it? I guess you go to a Motley Crue concert, you go to one of those concerts with the one song that everyone can't wait to it's played. When you come out on stage, the place goes nuts, doesn't it?
Yeah, there was a time that, you know, it was kind of a bigger than life experience. I mean, the beat would drop to the song, the crowd would go nuts, and then it would go to another level when I walked, because we had a reveal. The track would start, but then when the beat actually came in is when I came on stage, and it was a very touchy-feely, tingly moment, you know, when I could hear the crowd elevate from already being at a fervor pitch, and then it goes up a little higher. And when I started singing, you know, they're all singing with me, and it was just amazing, amazing.
And you kind of helped make this become big time, right? Can you tell us that story once? Meaning that they had the idea of what you were going to do, but your impromptu acting, singing, help make this become an overnight success, didn't you?
Well, I can't really take credit for all of it. I mean, like I said before, it was a three-piece thing.
Yeah, but that's what everyone remembers. Trust me, once. You could be the humble one. I'll say it. But
yeah, people have been telling me for a couple of years now that, dude, you make that video or you make that song, and I can't take credit for it, because, you know, a house is not made from one stick of wood. You know what I'm saying?
No.
You know, and nobody gets through and is successful in this life doing it all on their own.
Never.
And so, you know, with respect to that, you know, it was, I think that, you know, there was amount of exposure for me just being who I am. You know, that's the person that you see at 2 minutes and 53 seconds into that video is the person that I've always been. And you know what? I like to have fun just like everybody else. And I just, you know, they didn't give me very much direction. They just pointed the camera at me and said, we just want to film you singing the hook. And what came out is what came out. And that's what people see.
And Wands, how did your life change? Meaning recognition, different things like that. Once that song hits viral and it's going crazy and you're touring and everything, how did that change where you're used to just doing your normal everyday things and people recognize you? I talked to reality TV stars about this. I talked to, you know, people that never had a big show and then they got that big show. How did that change for you?
Well, the best way to put it is this. You know, I'm 53 years old now, and I've been doing music since I can remember. And I can tell you that in the last 2 years, because of that song, every single dream that I've ever had has come true.
Wow.
Been the top of the charts, not only in the U.S., but around the world. The numerous awards. I have plaques on my wall. And to a certain extent, you know, it was really hard for me to get my mind around, dude, you're on a song that is going to be remembered
forever.
Forever.
Yeah. You can walk into any bar anytime, and then and then they play the song, and you have everybody buy you drinks.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it was so wild. It was so wild to go out, you know, for a week or two on tour to all these different places, and then to come home. And all the while, you know, I come home to my little two-bedroom apartment and try to get back to normalcy, and I'll go somewhere and not be recognized. Because, you know, I don't, you know, unless I was wearing that suit, most people didn't recognize me.
Right, exactly.
So that was kind of mind-boggling at first, but, you know, my Facebook just took on a life of its own. Anybody anywhere who heard that song was always, you know, tagging me in this, and any covers of it, people were tagged, hey, have you seen this? And it's like, wow. It took me a while to understand how popular this phenomenon actually was. And, you know, once I got my mind around it, it was right about the time that it had peaked in its popularity. And then it was like, oh, great. Now that you've been to the top of the mountain, how do you deal with that downside?
Yes.
You know, because it's a long, and it takes a while to get up there and it takes a while to get down. And, I had a friend of mine explain it to me in a lot of ways. When the Macklemore business started pushing Can't Hold Us as the next big thing after Same Love, they were pushing Can't Hold Us. And it was like, oh, okay, we used to do Thrift Shop 2 times a night. Now we're doing Can't Hold Us 2 times a night. And then, and it was like, oh, crap, this is over. Oh, crap, this is over. And he said to me, you know what? You have to think of yourself as the big brother, you know? The firstborn, everybody gets introduced to the firstborn, and then there are other siblings that come along, and you are the person who gets to introduce everybody else to all the rest of Macklemore's music, which has led to, a double platinum record for him and 4 Grammys for him, 2 of which are mine. And, it's led to all this success. And it, like I said before, nobody does this all by themselves. It may look that way, but that's not the way it is. And now that the whole fervor over Thrift Shop is way over and been over, and the touring has ended, and Ben and Ryan are working on a new record, and I don't know whether I'm going to be a part of that record or not. And it's led to a lot of weirdness. But once you've been up there, it's kind of weird when it's over.
It's like the athlete Wands that was on top and decided to retire, and now it's a new change in their lives. It's time for them to reinvent themselves. You're doing the same thing in a way.
Yeah. It's more like the athlete who was like the MVP of the World Series or the scores the winning touchdown in the Super Bowl.
Yeah.
And now it's a new season. So
a new team. Yeah. No, I wouldn't say retiring, but it's a new journey. You're now going to be on your own. Possibly. We don't know. What I'm just saying is that's how the athlete feels. You're at this point where you were on top. Like, for example, Michael Jordan made 16 different retirements, or somebody was on a hit show. That hit show ended. What to do now? They are typecast in a certain way. Now, what's new with Wands now? What's going on with the Wands or Wands and your music? Because that's your passion, your music. And I hope and I need our listeners out there to tweet out, we want Wands back for another tour of Macklemore. And anytime they perform that song, Wands has to be there. That's the truth. But, I mean, and it's always going to be that way. You never know. You might be brought back 30 years from now, just like Motley Crue, and you're back doing that. But you can ultimately, but what's going on with your music? Because I see your passion. I see where you're going. And you were talking about an interesting video you shot last year, for sure.
Yeah. What's happening for me is I'm going back to what I know, which is making my own music. I released, when Thrift Shop got popular, I wanted to put music out there and show that I was more than Thrift Shop. And even though people told me not to do it, what I had before Thrift Shop was music that I was doing to remind me of my passion. And so I put out this 5-song EP called Wander, which is basically me taking, my journey out of depression. Because, what do you do when your dreams aren't going to come true? You have to figure it out. You have to pick yourself up and dust yourself off and keep walking. So, that was not really very well received, even though, the content of it, people found inspiring. And that drove me to, I'm here doing the Macklemore thing because of Nate Dogg. And so I wrote, in response to a kid I heard outside of a show once who was saying, dude, you're just riding coattails. You're just trying to be like Nate Dogg. And I had met Warren G., he and Nate were best friends. I had met him in 2012, and I asked Warren, what was Nate like? And so he told me what it was, what his friend was like. And I remembered that story, took it back to the bus, and that became the impetus of this song called To Nate Dogg that I dropped in the beginning of 2014, or in June of 2014. and it got a little bit of traction, but didn't have a video. And, you know, I never felt that I really did justice to it, and it wasn't until the beginning of this year, 2015, that I pooled resources and just went and made it myself because no one was helping me. So I put together this video, and now it's out on YouTube. And at last check, it was like at 35,000 views just through my social media to Nate Dogg by Wands. And Warren liked it so much that he got on and put a verse. And then two other guys, friends of mine from here from Seattle, they got on it too. And, you know, everybody who's heard loves that song because it encapsulates what I heard about Nate Dogg. You know, he's a fun-loving guy who liked to have... He loved to have fun. He was a joker. He liked to drink. He liked to smoke, and that kind of contributed to his death. But most of all, you know, that first verse by Warren is one friend talking about his homie who's no longer here. And, you know, in order for me to do this correctly, I told everybody involved, I said, I just want to come correct and pay homage to this guy because I wouldn't have been on. There would have been no thrift shop if it hadn't been Nate Dogg. That's period, end of story. And the ultimate was not only getting Warren on the song and appearing in the video, but Nate's son, blessed, you know, he likes it so much that, you know, now he's calling me and we're working on music together. So, you know, to Nate Dogg, if you haven't seen it yet, go to YouTube and look up Wand to Nate Dogg and check it out. That's part of what I'm doing now. I'm working on an EP of more music and trying to get on other features and you know, trying to forge out my own career after thrift shop. Because, like I said, once you've been there, it's like Disneyland or any, you know, big vacation. You know, it's really great when you're in it and
yes,
you're doing
definitely,
it.
Yes, definitely, definitely, yeah.
Yeah, when you're going home, it's like, God, can we do this again? Can we do this again?
So do you think you'll do any more collaborations with Nate Dogg and Warren G again? Do you think anything could come from that?
Well, I don't know. Warren and I, we text every once in a while and keep up with each other, and he knows where I am, and he knows that there aren't any singers out there that sound as close to Nate other than me. But, you know, that's a fine line because that's his homie. And then, you know, when you lose somebody, it's not like, you know, when your dad dies, the next guy that comes along is now your dad, but it's still not the same.
So he sees that you can collaborate with you because of Nate's passing, but still be able to say, hey, I don't know if I can always call on you for that. But what an unbelievable, that experience would never have happened for you, Wands, if it wasn't for Thrift Shop, correct?
Yeah.
Yeah,
sure. I would say that's pretty accurate. That's pretty accurate.
And Warren's still doing his music as well, Warren G.
Yep. Yeah. He came through. He came through here up in the Northwest. He came through in the middle of March, and got to open a couple of shows and host a couple of shows, and it was good to come through and see him. And he actually, you know, got on stage, and we actually performed to Nate Dogg, and it was amazing. It was exhilarating. And, you know, to be on stage doing that song with Warren and the other two guys, and then off to the side on stage was Nate's son. It was electric. It was amazing.
Well, fantastic for sure. Where's the best place we can find information on you, Wands, learn more about you? Where can we go?
All you got to do is Google WANZ, and you'll find out everything.
Definitely. You'll find out the whole ball of wax for sure, and the excitement. So, Wands, I know you got a lot of different projects coming up, and you're really excited about your music, but what a ride, for sure. You said all your dreams came true through Thrift Shop. Now it's going to be just... caviar dreams for you all the way through, because I see you motivated. I see you wanting to keep going, and you're going to make those connections and keep enjoying this ride, because you never know where it will take you next.
That's exactly what I've told this to kids all over the world, because this was my experience. If you do something that makes you happy, and especially if it makes someone else happy, never, ever, ever stop doing it. Because you never know where it could take you.
All right. Well, fantastic. Best of luck, Wands. We'll stay in touch, and good talking to you, man.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on. It was a pleasure. Thank you.
All right. It was a great story. Take care. Thanks.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. You're listening to Total Celebrity Show, and we'll be back in just a moment.